You are listening to a sermon series from Open Door Fellowship Church.
So, Jesus has girded himself with a servant's towel, and he looks into Peter's eyes, and it becomes obvious, oh, no, you will not wash my feet. And Jesus says, Peter, if I don't, then you will not receive me as God. You must first let me serve you. And in that moment, we are watching the difference between a religion that says, you must love me, figure out how to love me, and a faith that says, will you first let me love you, and will you receive my love? And then Jesus doesn't stop there. He says, now watch what I'm doing. Peter, you call me Lord, and I am, and I'm washing your feet. This is the first time you've ever experienced anything like this. Now go do it to each other. Peter, starting with you and spreading out all over this world until I return. Wash each other's feet. Serve each other. It's who you are now. Beautiful, beautiful picture. The last thing in the world you would have expected happening that night in Jesus' last words, that before he did anything, he would present himself as servant to Peter and to the rest. Your best friend saves his best words until now.
I've been in trouble with delay. Can I just get something clear right now? I will not be preaching this morning till someone comes and sits in the front row. Thank you. I see that. I see one. Are there more? Are there others? You're filled. It's jammed up. People are sitting in the back. I got nothing. This is my best row. Thank you. Look, I see these people running up. Come. Bless you. I see you. Yes. Thank you. Celebrities, all. I may not even let my voice carry to the back rows. I care so little about you today. Open your Bibles to John chapter 13. We are in the series now. We're in the second week of that series. Oh, my brothers and sisters, how much I wish that I had enough free travel miles to have taken all of you to where I was yesterday. But I don't, so I took about 30 of you, and no, I did not. I was in Atlanta, and I got to speak to a group of people that we didn't know existed a couple months ago. And for years, this group of consortium of mentors and mentorees, they have been using as their curriculum everything we ever publish. Everything. They use all of our books, True Face, Bose Cafe, The Cure, Now on My Worst Day. And it is required curriculum for them. And I got to speak to many of them yesterday. I was undone. I sat down and got a standing ovation, and grown men were weeping, and then lines of them came up to me just wanting to say thank you. Thank you for what this community had done for them. And I felt like you shouldn't be hugging me. You should be hugging Bruce and Janet. You should be hugging Bill and Grace. You should be hugging Kit Danley and Wayne. You should be hugging Bill and Charlotte. You should be hugging Mel and Beth Schultz. You should be hugging Odette, you should be hugging Shorty. You should be hugging Tom and Joyce Allen. It's just humbling, you guys, to see what God has chosen to do with this little, fragile community, disproportionate all over the world. I just wish you could have seen it. One day they'll show up. There's a dear brother there from Cedar Rapids right now. We're all finding each other. And you guys just get to host them. Whoever you see come in this room that doesn't look familiar to them, take the risk that you might be a deacon, but I'm going to welcome you anyway. So, I'm at the airport, at the Atlanta airport, and someone at the Delta table gives me the tip that if I go to the international concourse, that they have free Wi-Fi. So I'm sitting at the bar with my laptop open at the international concourse in the Atlanta airport, and I'm trying to come up with a message for you people, and I'm thinking, this is going to be trash. I've got nothing. And then, of course, I have a responsibility to Facebook as vice mayor. I have to check on there. And at one point, I check and I read something that undoes me. If there was a section of this book that was an appropriate precursor for me to ever understand what we're talking about today, it would be from an entry in 1962. Mr. Yukich passed away from kidney failure this year. He lived across the street on Altura Way. For some reason, he took a kind interest in me. If he saw me playing out front, he'd usually walk over and we'd sit for hours on our front stoop. Who does that? A 60-some-year-old and a kid spending unhurried chunks of time together. I felt known with him, even not talking at all. I think all along he was trying to convince me I was worth his time, like that single gift would help me. He had no idea how much it would. He talked to me about life, about nearly everything. He was wise. I listened to him because even then I could tell he wasn't given adult slogans. He listened to me like what I was saying was so important. He was real. Most adults saw me as a disrespectful, spoiled punk. So did Mr. Yukich. But he was able to see over it all. He gave me my first baseball glove. He restrung one from the garage and rubbed saddle soap into every crevice. I would give a lot to have that glove today. During my entire childhood, he was the only adult I ever visited in a hospital. I made my parents drive me there. When he ultimately passed away from kidney failure, it was the first time I'd experienced deep loss. When I eventually did start trusting others and risking to do it, it was largely because I'd once known someone trustworthy. I would waste far too much of my life in foolishness without wisdom fighting this truth. Anyone can get knowledge and information, but nobody gets wisdom and insight and discernment without trusting. Ever since Mr. Yukich, I was looking hard for such a place. And then I wrote, imagining what Jesus would say. John, I will make sure Bill Yukich sees this piece. So I'm on Facebook, and I don't notice it at first because it's coming through the public page, but there's this entry that shows up. It's from Helen Sessions. She says, "It's a small world, John. I am Mr. Yukich's eldest daughter. I live in Atlanta, and I just came across your Facebook page, and I remember you very well from the Altura and Amber neighborhood. I don't know if that's good or bad." I wrote back to her and I said, "This can't be possible, can it? Do you know I just wrote a section of your on your father in my most recent book, On My Worst Day? I loved that man so much. Helen, what a gift for you to tell me this. Wow. Thank you. Thank you. And she writes back, my dad would be so very proud of you and your life's work. So I'm just about ready to check out now. This will be my last message and my last day on earth. So I'm all cooked, I'm fried, I'm overwhelmed and undone and splintered. But I am so excited to be doing this passage with you today. Somewhere in this evening, I can't make the chronology work. I can't figure out when it happened. But Luke says apparently sometime after Passover or after the Lord's Supper, it says this astounding thing. They know that Jesus is telling them that he is going to die. They know that things are about to end. They know impending doom is upon them. They know something is about to happen at any moment. He has told them as much. And then it says right after he does the Lord's Supper and says, and remember me in this, it's the very next verse in Luke says, and there arose also a dispute amongst them of who would be regarded to be the greatest. What? I believe I'm the greatest. And when the kingdom comes, I believe that I will be, well, I will, and certainly I'll find place for you all, but I believe that I will be the one closest to Jesus. I mean, I think that's fair. I think we all know that. And the rest of you will certainly be nearby. What? I was talking to Bill about it earlier this week. It really isn't so unexpected when you think about it. These guys don't have new hearts yet. They're not new creatures. And they keep hearing about this new world. And they don't know anything about this new world except parables and odd, disjointed, metaphoric statements by Jesus. They don't get what's going on, but they so much want to be part of it. And they don't know what to do, what else to do but jostle for their place in it. It's the only way they know to compete for position and honor. And they're afraid. This is what you do when you're afraid. You act irrational. They're so absorbed in their self-preservation, they've forgotten graciousness and common kindnesses, like maybe washing each other's feet when they came in, and service and affection. Their hearts are as caked with mud as their feet and sandals. You know what's interesting about God? What about Jesus when he's on earth? He is eternally knowing and at once spontaneous. Even though he's seen and knows all these things are going to happen before mankind, he still enters into the moment as though this is the first time he's even thought or seen any of these events before. He cries, he weeps, he laughs, he's surprised. He's seen this moment forever, and yet he is also humanly responding to the moment. So he improvises a plan. It's right in front of him. There is a basin over in the corner by the front door, and there is a towel large enough to wrap oneself around with and to have a lot left over that you could wash and dry feet. Usually a servant would greet the guests at the entrance to wash their feet, but there's no one there. There's intentionally no one there. Most are now very afraid to be associated with Jesus and this group. The Pharisees are making it clear that there's something impending wrong is about to happen. Now, Jesus is not one for dramatics just for effect, but suddenly he fills the room with drama. All three of these verbs that are about to come are in the dramatic tense, either the dramatic present middle indicative or the dramatic present active. They are radically violent, strong words. It says Jesus got up, shot up off the ground in one moment, and then he laid aside, same dramatic word, he took off his outer robe, and he girded himself with a towel, probably all in about a 5-second motion. And you could have heard a pin drop. It says he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciple one by one, wash their feet and wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Can you imagine how quiet it is? By the way, Peter was not the first. Peter watched Jesus doing this for a number of the disciples first. And then he comes to Peter. And Peter knows what's taking place as Jesus crouches down in front of him, running his hands into the basin and then waiting for Peter to put his foot there, ready to take Peter's foot. Peter knows that Jesus is thinking this thought: Peter, you want to love me more than the rest, but you know almost nothing about letting me love you. This, my dear friend, will cost you dearly in less than 24 hours. Your great pride to love me enough will not be enough to keep you from denying me 3 times in less than 24 hours. But I'm going to teach you something. Verse 7 says, you won't understand it right now, but I promise you, you will later. Stop. The series is now. The series is right here. And Jesus is transported. He is not in the past. He's in the present. Right here. Today, right in this room. And he's asking us, do you choose to let me love you? Do you choose to let me love you? Listen, I died for the privilege of getting to love you. Will you let me? What if this was all that I wanted from you? To let you, let me love you. What if that was it? And whatever you did would come from the response to the love you experienced from me. Imagine Peter in that chair, just freaked out as he waits for Jesus to show and come to him. And then Jesus crouches down and his head is down. He's not looking up yet to Peter. No. Will you wash my feet? No! You will never wash my feet! And Jesus slowly looks up lovingly at Peter and says, oh, my friend, if I don't wash your feet, you have nothing to do with me. And Peter knows what's being asked of him. Will you let me love you, Peter? Will you put down your self-sufficiency and trying to prove to me that you are the rock and that you are the man? Will you let me love you, Peter? And Peter, he's so beautiful. He does it the worst and the best of any of them. He says, if that's true and I don't understand it, I don't get it, then pour the whole basin over me. Can you imagine the expression that Jesus is making towards Peter in that moment. And right there, that's one of eight moments in all biblical history. I would like, and just like a snapshot of that. And I'll get to later. I'll be eating pie in heaven. They'll show that. See, Peter is the consummate prototype of a man's man trying to figure things out on his term. Peter wants his courage and strength and determination to count for something, and Jesus counts only his simple heart of faith as something. God's ways must be hardest for the self-made man or woman, huh? After he says, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head, Jesus said to him, no. He who has been bathed, he who has been already washed, you've already been washed, Peter. You are going to believe in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And you will always be clean. Always. Now, it's true here, too. Once you've been bathed, you don't need to take a bath again. Your feet just get dirty from walking around in the Palestinian dirt. But he's saying more. He's saying, Peter, listen to me. You will once and for all be cleansed when you believe that I am the Son of God and that I died on the cross for you and that I was resurrected for you. Period. Nothing will ever be able to take that cleanness away. So he who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. Then he says in verse 12, so when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table, he said to them, do you know what I've done to you? And all of the disciples shake their head. No, we do not know at all what you have done. We don't get this one bit. It's very odd, very awkward. We're hoping you will explain. I want you to watch a pattern. There is a pattern in this passage that is the pattern of Christ dealing with all of our entire lives. Watch what it looks like. It is Jesus saying to us in every moment of our lives, every single one of us, stop trying so hard to love me enough. It won't hold up. Peter, three times tomorrow, you, with your great determination to love me more than the rest, you are going to betray me and deny me. Let me love you. Let me serve you. And you go, no, but that's easy. Then you'll have nothing to do with me. You will not benefit from me. Allow this love, then, that you receive, allow it to create a trust of me. Receive my love and allow it, because that's what I'm doing. I'm forming trust. And then if you have allowed my love to create trust, then come under me. Come under my strength to protect you and clean you and free you. I know you're terrified of that word, of that phrase. But that's what this is all about. Stop trying so hard to love me. Let me love you. Let me serve you. Allow this love to create a trust of me and then come under my strength instead of yours to protect you and clean you and free you. And then spend the rest of your life doing this to each other. Letting others love you and protect you and you learning how to earn trust with them so that you can love and protect them. Stop trying so hard to love me. These are hard words to say. I've got to give up my right to self-protect if I am ever to be protected. He's not threatening him in verse 8 that Peter's going to lose his salvation. He's just warning, you will miss what I have for you, Peter. I love you so much. So then the pattern keeps going. Let me love you. Let me serve you. Allow this love to create trust in me. Come under my strength to protect you and clean you and free you. See, in him coming around with the basin, something more than just washing their feet is taking place. If you'll put up that slide, Alan. Don't miss what's taking place. This is not just the awkwardness of having one you know is much more worthy of honor asking to wash your feet. This is the culminating question by Jesus Christ to every single one of us. By now, have I proven to you that I am able and worthy of running your world? Will you come under my assessment, my ability, my love, my choices? That is what's taking place. Nothing less. Verse 8 is, John, I will be of no use to you. You've been with me long enough. If you don't trust me by now, if you don't let me love you, if you keep trying to impress me with your fake piety, if you keep trying to prove that you're more sold out than the rest, if you keep holding me at bay and trying to protect your world enough, if you stay afraid of letting anyone close enough in to protect, then it's John's world. It's John's kingdom. It's John's deity. And I am of no use to you. Do you understand what I just said? I know. We're terrified of the word submission, aren't we? This is the part where you actually respond back. Yeah, yes. Because it's been used as a trump card, hasn't it? How many of you have had, raise your hand if you've ever had someone say to you, you must submit to me. Yeah, it's about everybody. That is for sure someone you would not want to submit to and should not submit to. Humility, you remember on the cover of True Face, humility is trusting God and others with me. That's real humility. Nothing else is real humility. Humility is not some character attribute. It is a choice to trust God and others with me. And to submit, oh how beautiful. To submit. To submit is to trust another to come under their ability for my benefit. To submit is to take a look at a man like Stu and realize I can't do it as a self-referencing system. I don't have it all. In fact, I have one gift out of 75. And this man has strength. And so this man is earning the right so that I will trust him, so that I will come under his ability, under his person, under his strength, under his goodness, and let him protect me for my benefit, for my maturing, for my health, for my growing up, for my protection from evil. By the way, Stu is one of those people. A bunch of you are those people for me. I don't make it. I told those people yesterday, I don't make it without a community of people who protect me. I would have been so done. I would, wherever bad is, you would find me. Protection has been, and to come under it, has been the most difficult and most sacred gift for me in my life. It's stunning to realize how many of us have only ever trusted ourselves for anything other than heaven. For most of us, we are our own final vote, our own protection. And Jesus is saying to us, if you spend the rest of your life self-protecting from me and others, you're going to miss it all. You are going to miss it all. You will be self-referenced. You'll not become wise. You'll toot your own horn. You will not see yourself accurately. You'll miss the power of the love of others, for you will not let anyone meet your needs. And I know why we do it. We're afraid. We've been hurt by authority. We've been wounded and afraid and jaded. We got hurt. I know. But Jesus still comes around with the basin and the towel and says, but what about me? I have been your authority. What about me? Am I worthy of your trust? What is harder to risk than coming under the offer of another offering to take over what you've been doing alone all your life? I wonder, you may challenge me on this, but my best friends will tell you are wrong. I wonder if there's anyone more fiercely self-protective than me. I am so afraid of being embarrassed. I'm so afraid of being shown as failed. I so much want to self-protect John Lynch. I feel like a fifth grader still learning to let another, even Jesus, walk into my shame, my embarrassment, my fear of losing, my deep hunger for being enough, for manipulating to make my life count. Nothing has been harder than to allow Jesus to wash my feet. For I know what comes next. I know what's next on that list. He's going to want me to let go. He's going to want me to open my hands. I know what comes next. I'm going to ask you to do something. I never ask you to do anything, do I? Ever. Am I right? Is that fair? I just talk these messages and you go home and have a nice meal. But I want to ask you to do something. I would like to ask you in a moment to take off your shoes and socks. And I would like you to keep them off until we're done with communion. You don't have to do it, but I really think you will benefit from the next few minutes a lot more if you do. So let's take off our shoes and socks. For women, this is nothing. You got flip-flops on. It's the men. We have shoes and socks, but take them off. Take them off. Don't worry about what your feet look. My toenails look like seashells. All right. Now, would you close your eyes? And imagine, even though it's tight, that Jesus has been going down your row from the far end, far away from you, and he has been girded with the towel, and he is washing the feet of the people in your row. And you are looking down the row and watching him. And you know he's going to try and come wash your feet, and you know he's going to look into your eyes. And he's going to reach for your foot. And you know he is the holy, beautiful God who made the stars and the heavens. And you know what you have done. You know how you have failed. You know how you have let him down. You know how you have betrayed him. You know all the things. And you know he knows. You do not want him to wash your feet. But here he comes. Oh my gosh, here he comes. And he's right in front of you. And you can hear the water in the basin. His hands are going through it. And he's reaching for your foot. And you find yourself involuntarily saying, you're going to wash my feet? No. You'll never wash my feet. Please don't, please. And he waits for a moment and he looks up and he makes the most beautiful smile to you. And he says, "Kid, now come on. If I don't wash your feet, you get nothing from me. You get nothing of me. And so what do? You sit there and you think through all of who he is and what he has done and the words that he has said over you to the exact extent that my Father loves me, so also I love you. I'm crazy about you. There is no condemnation. Before the world began, I thought about you. I love you so much. I know everything you've done. I make no mistakes. I chose you. I know what you will yet do that you haven't done and don't even know about. And you find yourself taking this moment to say, so what would happen if I trusted his love? What would be the cost if I came under him, if I brought my life under him and stopped being in charge and stopped controlling my world? What would happen? Would he fail me? Would he come through? Would I play the fool? All this is going through Peter's mind. All this is going through John Lynch's mind. But now it's your turn. Could I, for the rest of my days, come under the promise of his strength and goodness and love and not control and manipulate my world to get it what it is that I want? And if you are like me, at least in this moment, I find myself saying, oh my God, then not just my feet, everywhere. Wash me. Wash me. Wash me all over. Pour it all over me. I have no other life. I don't want any other life. I am so sorry for every moment that I have wasted and missed letting you love me. Jesus is gracious enough also to say, after he says, wash my hands and head, he says, no, look, he who's bathed only needs to wash his feet, Peter. But then you're completely clean, and you are clean, Peter. Oh, my friend, you are clean. Do you know that about you? You who have dared to trust, to put your hope in Christ, there's never a time where he looks at you and says, you know what? I have to get away from you because you're not clean. Never. Ever. It's this picture, remember? It's the power of the shed blood of Christ. But he says you can never experience being clean by anything you do. These daily things that hit you, you can never experience being clean when you fail again. When you do the thing that you said you would never do, yes, you're clean from trusting Christ once and for all, but only to... Now listen. Listen so carefully. It took me so long to believe this or understand it. Only dependence upon the shed blood of Jesus, just like only dependence upon the shed blood of Jesus saved me, only the shed blood of Jesus and my dependence upon it can ever cleanse me from my present sin. No amount of assuaging or trying to grease the skids or making up for or crying hard enough, nothing else, nothing will ever deal with that failure, with that sin. Dependence upon the same shed blood is the basis to be freed from every single hitch and failure and shame and embarrassment and wounding and hurt and rejection and anger and unforgiveness. Some of us are carrying bitterness and hurt and failure. We try to think it away, assuage it away, but we never feel clean. We always feel unworthy. I must intentionally draw upon the shed blood of Jesus as payment for everything. It alone can deal with my sin before and after. Guys, what I do now, it's all I know how to do anymore. When I fail or I mess up, no matter what it is, I shot a man in Reno. Here's what I have to do. I have to see the picture of Jesus hanging on the cross, and I have to see his shed blood. And I have to say, Jesus, and I have to believe this, I'm counting upon what you did on that cross for me to be enough to cleanse me right now. And I am convinced that nothing else can or will cleanse me. I am depending totally upon what you did on the cross when you shed your blood for me to cleanse me completely right now. And he says, John, you picked the correct door. You are clean. I know you killed a man in Reno. You are clean. You're going to spend some time in the slammer, but you and I are good. Tell me you understood what I just said. You guys, do you know how much that's going to protect us if we believe that? Tell me again you just understood what I said. Then he says, spend your life doing the same for and from others. Huh. What does he mean? He says, look, you call me teacher and Lord, you're right, so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, wash your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, oh, you're blessed if you do them. Now he's not talking about, I wanted to do this thing where the elders were going to come up and wash everybody's feet, and wouldn't that show? So it's not the point. Not the point. He's saying, will you let someone else wash your feet? Will you let them, will you come under them and let them protect you? And will you find those who need you to protect them and earn their trust so that they will come under you and let you protect them? Stop trying so hard to love me. Let me love you. Let me serve you. Allow this love to create trust in me. Come under my strength to protect you and clean you and free you. And then spend your rest of your life doing the same for and from others. So, think first. Anyone who desires to influence another, like a child, or a friend, or a spouse, are you willing to earn trust so another would receive your love? Are you willing to take the time to earn trust so that another can receive your love? Are you willing to be a servant to them and not demand your authority? And that would mean you being winnable. Are you willing to own your influence to protect them when they do trust you? Jesus is showing in his kingdom, greatness is not found in trying to be seen as great. Greatness is found in giving away all the gifts of capacity that you've been given to meet the needs of others. Did you hear that? Greatness is found in giving away all the gifts of capacity that you've been given to meet the needs of others. They are never to be spent on yourself. Parents, if you lead as a servant, your children will follow you to the ends of the earth. Lead by the power and leverage of your role, and they'll do duties, but you'll never engage their heart. Force them into obedience, and you'll get compliance. Make them obey because I said so, and they will resent you. Win because you can, and instead of explaining why you're disciplined, and you will win the battle, but you'll lose their hearts. Refuse to own when you've parented out of anger and fear, and they will fight your influence. get your way, and they will not let you influence their hearts. And now I look at me, one who desires to risk being influenced by another. He says, that's what I'm supposed to do, by the way. Am I willing to give somebody a chance to be trusted? I know I've been burned. I know I've been burned. I know I've been burned. Am I willing to give someone a chance to be trusted? Am I willing to let them love me and serve me? Am I willing to come under their strength to protect and free me? I got to tell you, the only ones I've ever let influence me or lead me, they have the authority of a servant. Someone that I was convinced had my best interest at heart. Such I would follow my whole life. I stumbled into such a place. Its name was Open Door Fellowship. A long time ago, I stumbled into such a place, and that's why I can't leave it. I don't stay because of the great facilities. You know that, right? I stay because I found this here. Your leaders are not always exceedingly competent. I don't know if you've noticed that, but they have always been servants. Oh, and by the way, not all leaders have titles. Look around you. Who are your leaders? They're the ones who sacrifice for you best and sacrifice for your best. Here's the payoff. Those who dare come under and risk that, they become wise and discerning and insightful and deeply compassionate and loving. And those who don't, they become only smart and full of knowledge and self-referenced smug opinions, learning the same 1 year of truth over and over and over. You know what? I reference back to this. It's interesting when I speak to you. When I eventually did start to trust others, it was largely because I'd once known someone trustworthy, Mr. Yukich. It's interesting, Peter does the very same thing. And this is where I'll end. He says, now, you younger men, be subject to your elders. Will you do that? But then he says to all of you, he says, to all of you, gird yourself. Wrap around the towel. Gird yourself with humility towards one another. For God's opposed to the proud, but he gives a whole lot of grace to the humble.